money.
I'm going to lead it. You're going to lead it? If you want to do it, go ahead.
Oh, shit.
Go ahead.
We were on the air 3 seconds and he has to edit something out. It's going to be one of those shows. Anyway, my friends, I am Dave Champion. This is my co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared.
As if that didn't explain it.
That's right. I have an announcement to make.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. To you, to our audience.
Wow. I'm with bated breath.
Yes, here. Yes. And deservedly so.
Okay.
I.
Oh, you blew it. This has got to be funny
now. I can't even pull it off.
I thought you were serious.
I am acting under the authority of God. Just thought I'd put that out there.
Wow.
Hey, Kim Davis said it. The county clerk of Rowan County.
Kentucky.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes. Now, you probably are aware that she was sued in federal court by, I think it was 3 same-sex couples to whom she declined to issue marriage licenses.
After the Supreme Court ruling.
After Obergefell, yes.
Yes.
And the 3 couples went to the ACLU. The ACLU, on their behalf and establishing a class, you know how it works with the class stuff.
Right.
Okay. Filed a suit in the United States District Court, and it ended up in front of Judge David Bunning, who actually took a lot longer than I thought the issue was. To me, it would have been like, what? No. And that would have been the end of it. He took 10 days to issue his order, and the order was, no, sorry, you can't do that. You're welcome to have whatever personal opinions you'd like to have. You can call them religion if you want, but your personal opinions can never be used to not do the job that the government job for which you've been hired.
Okay.
In this case, elected.
Okay.
So he said, sorry, can't do it. And the really important part is under Obergefell, those same-sex couples have a constitutional right to wed. So it's not just a matter of I don't want to do this thing. It's I want to deprive those people of their constitutional right as established by the court.
Okay.
Or as acknowledged by the court.
Allow me to just interject hypothetically here, but I'm sure you've got more information. But in Indiana, where they have the religious protection law, which is I can hide behind religion to discriminate law.
Right.
I wonder how it would go there if one of their county clerks did the same thing. I know the Supreme Court ruled this, but the state law says this. That'd be interesting.
Supremacy clause. Any area of the Constitution where the United States government, any one of its 3 branches, has occupied that ground, constitutionally speaking. I mean, it has to be within their scope. Once it's occupied that ground, any state law contrary to that federal opinion or federal law, whether it's black letter or court decision, it's void. That's the supremacy
clause. It's interesting you said within their scope because the federal government rarely operates within their 17 enumerated authorities anymore.
Right, and I think maybe one of these days we're going to get into this because I've been reading a fascinating book on James Madison, and one of the things that I noticed when I was reading the book is most people don't know that Madison, almost all the provisions he felt were important in the Constitution were not adopted.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, even though he's called the father of the Constitution, most of the things that he wanted, probably 85% of the things he would have liked to have seen in the Constitution were not adopted by the convention. So, but I've noticed that since 1789, when it was ratified by all the states, to today, by hook or by crook, by one mechanism or another, virtually every single one of those things that he wanted in the Constitution is now operative in one way or another. Interesting, yes?
Very interesting.
All right, so back to Kim Davis. Goes to the Sixth Circuit. She goes to the 3-judge panel. Their opinion was like lightning fast.
She asked for a stay? Is that what she
did? Well, no, she asked for a stay, and they granted that, but then she, like, within days, she filed her appeal.
Okay.
And within, like, minutes, I'm exaggerating, but they didn't take the time that Bunning did. They came back, and they were like, no, you're done, forget it. You know, Bunning was right, you're wrong. And so then she asked for a stay from the Sixth Circuit so that she didn't have to be controlled by Bunning's order while she considered her options to go to the Supreme Court. And the Sixth Circuit said no. And stays are in civil matters. This is a civil matter. Stays are issued
almost automatic.
Absolutely. That's a good way to characterize that. They only say no when there's like pretty damn close to zero chance that your case is going
to
prevail.
You have to be able to hold at least a few drops of water in your glass of BS.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They denied her stay. So she files an emergency petition with the Supreme Court asking for an emergency stay. And the Supreme Court said, it took them like 3 days, and they came out with one sentence answer. The emergency petition from, you know, the appellee, Kim Davis, is hereby denied. Phew, done. No explanation. No, right.
Wow. No opinion, no nothing.
So she ended up then, as of Monday, when that was issued by the Supreme Court, she ended up under the full force and effect of Judge Bunning's order, which is you have to do this. This isn't discretionary as a government employee. You can feel whatever way you want to feel, but as a government employee, you got to do what the law says. And so Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock, they unlock the doors. In comes the three same-sex couples. In come all the activists. In come the news reporters, right? And this is all getting to what I wanted to say. So Kim Davis says to them, I'm not issuing you marriage licenses. And one of the same-sex partners says, this is discrimination and disrespectful to us. Kim Davis responds, it's not disrespectful because I'm acting under the authority of God.
So that's now the authority from where you're going to derive.
Woo! Yep. Well, hey, I figured it was good for her, right? You know, hey, you know, when this goes back to Bunning, by the way, Thursday morning, the audio, it'll be the morning of the night that you all in Pahrump see the show. She's now got a contempt hearing in front of Judge Bunning because she failed to comply on Tuesday and Wednesday. But
the attorneys must have been ready to go straight to court to get that.
Well, here's how I think
it's 48 hours later.
Right. Here's how I think this worked. I think the ACLU had an attorney with them. I mean, it's their client, right? And I think the ACLU had all the paperwork drawn up, and they had somebody standing at the clerk's office, right? The court
file.
Right.
She said no.
Yeah, file that paperwork because it was like immediate, right?
Yeah. Ready, set.
And I'm sure this was set with Bunning. I'm sure Bunning doesn't want this to drag on either. You know, this kind of thing needs to be nipped in the bud. And so I'm sure Bunning's clerk was saying, we're ready for it, you know.
And as I understand, she's not the only county clerk in Kentucky.
No.
That is against this. Isn't there some
yes.
jackass on a bicycle?
Yeah. There's a guy, weird coincidence in names. His name is Casey Davis. He's a clerk for another county. His name is Casey Davis, no relationship to Kim Davis. And the county for which she is the clerk is Casey County, Kentucky. So, and he's now doing this bicycle tour around Kentucky trying to raise awareness to have the governor encourage the legislature to pass a law saying that county clerks somehow taking the county clerks out of the whole marriage license game, which is never going to happen. Now, get this, though. Casey Davis, the clerk of Casey County, has said that he will not issue them either. Okay? However, his county is so small, apparently there are no gay people living there. So he is at this, I'm sorry, no gay people living there that actually want a marriage
license. Well, yeah, none that are going to go there and petition to get a marriage license.
Right. And so, but he's, I mean, if a couple of gay folks in Casey County decide they want to get married, he's next up to bat, whatever happens to Kim Davis.
You don't even need that. You could go to Casey County and say, I want to get married in Casey County, so I'm going to go to Casey County Court. It's like if you get married in Las Vegas, you got to go to the Clark County clerk's office in order to get the marriage license.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily have to live in Casey County. They could just say, that's where I want to get married. That's where I'm going. Yeah.
Now, see, that's the kind of thing I don't necessarily approve of, because that's like the real sort of crazy activist stuff.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah.
You know, to go to another county just to make a political point.
Yeah, to cause trouble.
Yeah. You cause enough trouble in your own county. That's...
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about.
And then we have what's his name? Robert Bentley, the Alabama governor.
Oh, Bobby B.
Bobby B.
Uncle Bobby B.
He sounds like he's like some sort of pop star.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Uncle Bobby B.
Too bad he's 72 years old. Republican governor of Alabama, in his second term, he ran both times on a very strong platform.
Holier than thou.
Family values, hard conservative, Christian. I mean, I'm not throwing this out there like gossip stuff. This is what he ran on, okay? Deacon for decades of the Baptist church to which he belongs. And he's out there saying to vote for me because I am all these things,
yep.
Right?
I belong on a pedestal. This is where I belong, and you can believe in me. Always the most hypocritical of people.
And his wife filed for 50 years, filed for divorce last Friday. And it turns out the reason for the divorce is he's been busy stooping his communications director, 30 years his junior, who...
Male or female?
In this case, female.
Oh, okay.
Who's...
I just want to know how deep the hypocrisy gets.
Pretty deep, because she's also married.
Oh, wow.
She's also a fervent Christian.
Oh.
Right, claimed, of course. She's got school-age kids at home, and on her Twitter account, there's always a little... You get to put in a little bio in there. It says she loves her family, Jesus, and Reese's Cups, but not necessarily in that order. And my thought was, why didn't she write in there, but I love Governor Bentley Schween more than I love my family and Jesus.
Wait a minute. This sounds like a marketing ploy for the Reese's company.
Yeah.
It's like I love my husband, Jesus, and Owens Corning fiberglass insulation.
There you go.
More that has to be a marketing ploy.
Keebler cookies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which are great in milk. This is, you know,
from the dairy industry.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, you and I have when we talk privately, I mean, we talk often about this hypocrisy stuff going on. You know, it's like 99% of the people on the planet are screwed up one way or another. Okay. I don't think, is there anybody who doesn't understand?
So it's that 1%
that's
actually the ones that are screwed up.
Yes, and
they're so square, they've got nothing to offer the rest of
us
for entertainment value.
You know, but to me, it's like, I would never like get up on a podium and start ranting about being all moralistic or whatever their pitch is, because I know I'm just as screwed up as everybody else. There's no way I'm going to set myself up for that kind of thing. So yeah. I don't understand these people who do this.
It drives me nuts when...
Oh, by the way, just Josh Duggar,
uh-huh.
He is MIA from his... put him like in facility. What do they call that?
I have no idea what the hell you're talking
like
about.
Like when you stop drinking, they send you to.
Okay.
You go to get what kind
rehab?
Of rehab? Thank you. He went to some Christian rehab thing.
Rehab is for quitters.
And now he's MIA from his Christian rehab.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know what are you going to do, Josh Duggar? Just another hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's it continues to go downhill.
Under the authority of God. You heard it here. And we'll be back right after these
under
words.
The authority of
all right, we are back, and now it's time for... What is up with people who need to twist facts to try and fit the paradigm that they wish existed, to try and mislead others by mischaracterizing the facts? Let me give you a couple of examples. The one that's I'm pretty hot on right now is this nonsense I'm hearing about there's a war on police. Now, I just did an article with video, so if you like the article, you can read. If you like to watch the video, they're both in the same presentation. On DaveChampionsLiberty.com, just go to the blog page. The very first one there is, it says, entitled, Fact, There is No War on Police. Now, the rhetoric that you're hearing from people is that, you know, 7 officers were killed in 8 days. Well, actually, now it would be something like 8 officers killed in 10 days, something like that, because the morning that I made that presentation, an officer was killed just out in a suburb of Chicago. But the part that irks me about this is people say this because they want it to be true. Okay? And the facts don't support it. Now, let me explain what I mean. Because somebody might say, you know, oh my God, Dave, are you telling me that 8 officers killed in 10 days is not a war on cops? And that's exactly what I'm telling you. First of all, 4 of those had nothing to do with any ordinary murdering of a police officer. Although they're included in the numbers, it just isn't so. One gal was off duty and hit standing in the roadway talking to somebody after a traffic accident. Off duty? How was that? It was an accident. Somebody accidentally hit her and killed her. It was not a war on cops. Another guy was accidentally run over by a 72-year-old man was pulling a trailer. The trailer, when he changed lanes, hit a motor cop and sucked him under the... Tragic. I mean, you read the description. It's heart-wrenching what really happened to that officer. But nobody tried to kill him. It was a 72-year-old man who changed lanes and never saw the guy. Another guy dropped dead of a heart attack. He had severe heart disease. He was a prison guard, actually. He wasn't an out-on-the-street cop. He got in a verbal confrontation with somebody. He had massive heart disease. He got a little worked up, and he keeled over. I mean, it's not funny, but it's funny that somebody would try and characterize it as evidence that there's a war on cops. And one guy, yeah, he was in uniform, and he did go to a domestic dispute, and he did get murdered by his cousin. Okay, so there's a little bit more to that story. It's not just the ordinary stuff. So that leaves the other four. And so then people say, well, isn't that enough? Day four people killed? No, it's not, because it's happened before. Have you ever said to yourself, man, things are just not swinging my way right now? And you look and you say, man, this happened 4 days ago. This happened 3 days ago. All this bad stuff has happened. I wonder when this run of bad luck is going to be over. And guess what? It ends, right? And suddenly all those sequential bad things stop and either goes neutral or good things start happening. You're like, well, I'm glad that's done. The same thing happens with law enforcement. By the way, I want to be clear. I'm not trying to trivialize the death of those four officers. What I'm trying to do is say it doesn't signal anything other than there's a normal fluctuation. By the way, this has happened at other times in my life. This is one of the good things about being older. You can look back with a historical perspective. This has happened time and time again over the years where there's been this sort of, not so bad because social media didn't exist back then, but there's been this little, you know, rumbling of, you know, oh my God, three cops got killed in 5 days. Is this it? The race war is starting, you know. And then another 20 years goes by and nothing happens. So the point is, this has happened time and again. And just like we saw four officers killed in about 10 days, murdered. That's different than killed. It's a whole thing with the way the government keeps track of officers who die. For instance, if an officer is having lunch and he's eating a steak and he chokes on a piece of steak and keels over, if he's on the clock, that's died in the line of duty, which is not what the average citizen would imagine when they hear that phrase. So we want to talk about murder. We want to talk about attacked and murdered. So we had four in about 10 days. But here's the thing. When we have, say, a period of 90 days goes by and no cop is killed, nobody turns around and says, ah, I'm glad everybody's finally calming down and getting along. I'm glad that the criminals and the cops have had some sort of a... Nobody says that. They say, okay, a period of time went by and no cops got killed. And then one gets killed. Well, that's bad, right? Okay. And another one gets murdered. No, that's bad. And another one gets murdered. Remember, for 90 days, none of them got murdered. And suddenly, it's a war on cops! Now, here's the deal. Some statistics for you. When we talk about this war on cops, if the current rate of cops being murdered in 2015 continues through December 31st, there will be 25 police officers murdered in the United States in 2015. It may interest you to know that while people are looking at this number and saying, you know, it's a war on cops, that's half of the number of officers that were murdered in 2014. So how do you take something where the numbers have fallen 50% and say, now it's a war on cops? Also, the number of cops, we're looking at the 2015 figures and the presumptive conclusion end figure of 25, is a fraction, a tiny fraction of the number of police officers that died in 2001. That was one of the high marks. There's previous high marks if you go back into the 90s, the 80s, and 70s. But 2001 was a particularly high volume. I don't remember, 200 and something, I believe, died. Not murdered, died. And if you even take a look at all the ones that just died this in 2015, not murdered, it's not even half of 2001. So how do you turn around and say, it's a war on cops? When from 2001 to today, the number of cops died is halved. It's crazy. Another statistic for you. If a person is a police officer, they are 19% less likely to be murdered than are you or me. Huh. You would imagine they have this incredible victim status to listen to the police industry and certain self-serving politicians who are trying to promote their own political careers. You'd imagine the cops, man, if you're a cop, you're marked for murder. Yet they have a 19% less chance of being murdered than you and me. How come the police industry doesn't tell us that? So am I trying to paint some negative picture of law enforcement? No. Although they are part of the problem of promoting this false paradigm that there's a war on police, and there isn't. It's really, though, I mean, the cops are a small percentage of the overall population. Sworn state, county, and municipal police officers, there's 650,000 out of a nation of 225 million. They're a very small part of the demographic, so I don't blame them for the promotion of this crap. I blame the people of America, and obviously a certain smaller percentage of them, who feel it's more important to rile people up, to mischaracterize, to take something that happened right now in the last 2 weeks and take that completely out of historical context so that everybody thinks there's a war on cops. You know what the person is who does that? They're just an ignorant asshole. Okay? When the facts are completely contrary to what that person is saying. Bill, what do you have to say?
Facts? What facts? We need to operate on pure emotion.
Yes, yes. That's where I've gone wrong. Dude, thank you.
You know,
I need to quit with the facts and get with the emotion thing.
There's a guy, you know, that has been on this bandwagon, and he actually made a post on social media, essentially all but celebrating the death of an officer a couple, two, 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
And one thing led to another. He lost his job.
Oh, he did.
He lost his job.
Yep.
Yeah. Lost his job over that. And I was even contacted by a cop that, a former cop that I know that lives in the same community that this guy lives in, asking me if I knew much of anything about him. Interesting enough, right?
Did you tell him, yeah, I know he has the same right of free speech as you and me?
Pretty much. That's pretty yeah. much the way it went. I kept the conversation short and sweet and said, look, don't drag me into this.
Right.
I got nothing to do with this. If you go online, you look at all the various social media, there's a lot of rhetoric going on. As a matter of fact, Louis Farrakhan came out and essentially endorsed the rising of the blacks and the murder of the whites just this past week. Hmm. There's another guy, I don't think he's anybody. He claimed to be part of the new Black Panthers.
Oh, that would be nobody.
Yeah, and claim the same thing, that, you know, we're going to rise up, we're going to start killing cops and white people.
Now, can I interrupt you right there for a moment to ask you a question?
Sure.
Okay. Why is it that people, some yutz who's nobody, some homie bromy living down in the hood, dressing up in black, got his beret on, thinks he's, you know, who's that, Prince, you know, got his beret on, and, you know, power to the people, right? He's just some idiot knucklehead. And he says, let's kill all the cops, let's kill all the white people. And then people out in the community, see? That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking.
But he's not doing it. Louis Farrakhan's not doing it.
Right.
That's as cowardly as Charles Manson. You have to realize, Charles Manson never actually killed anybody, any of the Tates or LaBiancas. It was his crew that were following him. Now, keep in mind, he's claiming to be this religious prophet. They're following him as a religious prophet. He tells them, go kill these people. What is Louis Farrakhan? Well, the Black Nation of Islam.
Right.
Some crap like that, whatever he claims to be in charge of, he's now saying that sort of thing. Would he suffer the same copious liability as Charles Manson did, who not only got convicted, but was actually sentenced to death? The reason he's still alive? Well, they decided to do away with the death penalty. Everybody was commuted. When they brought the death penalty back, they weren't going to throw anybody back on there.
Can't. It's out of the Constitution.
Yeah.
But my point is, some little pipsqueak says something with a camera. And people act like that's something to get upset about. See, I told you, all them black folks, they're trying to kill all those white folks.
Yeah, because when they're done.
Some little pipsqueak said something. What the
when
hell?
When he's done, he puts his ball cap back on that has the name of whatever company he works for. Because break time's over. Oh. You know, I got to get back in the truck and head over here and I got a job
or,
to get done. You know,
would you like fries with that? Well, you know, but how come nobody, when they're doing all this panic stuff, they don't go to the black anesthesiologist that makes a couple $100,000 a year, who's got a Harvard education, and say,
Ben Carson, Dr. Carson, what do you think?
Were you wanted to kill all the white people? You know,
Clarence Thomas, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. It's people, but these are drama queens.
Sure.
Whether they're promoting this fake war on police, or that black people are, all the black people are going to come after, they're just nothing but pathetic, emotional drama queens.
I have another statistic for you. By the way, you said 225 million Americans. I believe you meant 325 million.
I did. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
But there's been 18 police officers which have actually been ambushed and killed so far this year.
19 as of the other day.
Is it 19?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's actually, that number's actually reducing. It's going down. And we'll be back after this. It's time to talk about stupid people and ignorant people. Coming up. You know what really grinds my gears? I already let the cat out of the bag. Ignorance and stupidity. What's the difference? Ignorance is just simply something that you don't know about. I don't know a whole bunch about stellar cartography. I'm ignorant. If I tried to learn about stellar cartography and I just couldn't get it in that realm, I'd be stupid. So ignorance is simply not knowing what you don't know. Stupidity is not being able to understand the facts at hand. What I'm about to talk about covers both. There's a lot of different subjects that people are passionate to one side or the other. Should we have the death penalty? Should we not? Pro-abortion, pro-life. It goes on and on. The biggest one that we've got that has the most ignorant people, and oftentimes the most stupid people, even when the facts are placed in front of them, is gun control. You can have a lot of anti-gunners out there who profess we shouldn't have guns. It should be this utopia. Never should we have any. We need to disarm people. There's even a group based out of Washington, D.C. that's got a Facebook page. They have actually professed that the people that follow them, if they see anyone out there following the law, obeying their constitutional rights, and merely carrying open or even concealed in their printing, or somebody can see because the jacket flies open, that even if the slightest hair grows on the back of their head about it, they should immediately call the police and report the person and have the police confront them. How stupid is that? That's like saying because, and here's their stupidity. I don't know, it's ignorance. I think this is the stupid part. They say, claim some sort of false fact that the people who own guns are far more likely to commit gun crimes. That's like saying if you own alcohol, then you're far more likely to be an alcoholic. Save me. Dave, please, save me on the stupidity here.
Well, I'll give you an example of how stupid these are. I'm going to go back to the gun thing. True story. In the news probably 4 or 5 months ago, black gentleman, mid-50s, I saw the video. He looks like he could be a working police officer. It wasn't like the dreadlocks, and, you know, he was wearing a pair of, like, Levi's jeans and a Pendleton and a baseball cap.
Just a regular-looking groom.
Regular-looking, right. And a white guy, and I bring up the race because I don't know how much of this is race-oriented. I'm not saying it is. I'm saying I don't know, so I want to make sure it's in the mix for people to consider for themselves. And a white guy, the guy's jacket flapped open a little bit, and the white guy saw that the guy had a gun on. And this video is from Walmart, and you know there's that big wide area in front of the cash registers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This guy's just walking along, and this white guy just, whoa, like swan dive through the air. Clamps him. They go crashing to the ground. He's choking this poor guy out on the ground. Bystanders finally come in and start pulling them apart. And, you know, he's like, he's got a gun! He's got a gun! You know, and of course, they call the cops now, right? And the cops are like, you have a gun? Yes. Like, you were wearing it concealed? Yes. Do you have a permit? That's a state that requires a permit. Yes, here it is. You, what were you doing?
I just saw a gun.
Right.
And flipped the hell out.
Yes. And he was arrested and prosecuted and convicted.
Good.
This is not the thing you're talking about. This is a recurring this is something that started about a year ago, and I've noticed happening on an ever-increasing basis, where the anti-gunners now are trying to encourage other anti-gunners. In one case, it was a college, a university professor, who actually told people, lie. If you see somebody with a gun, tell them, call the police, say you saw him threatening somebody or acting in a threatening manner, so that the police come with a very aggressive manner.
And that is exactly how Eric, what's his name, the guy that got killed at Costco in Las Vegas about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh,
Eric Scott.
Thank you. Yes.
That is exactly what happened to him.
Correct. A false report was made.
Security officer said, hey, we don't want you to have guns in here. Hey, I've been coming in here for a long time. I'm a member. Doesn't say anything on the door. Well, we reserve the option to change membership as we so see fit. We don't want you to have your gun in here. So, you know, fine. I'm going to finish my shopping and I won't be back. They didn't like that. They called the cops, say, a guy's got a gun in here, refusing to leave, and he's acting erratically.
Right.
I actually played on my old radio show the radio traffic from this. They were calling the incident, the SWAT commander to come be an incident commander, setting up command center about a block away in the parking lot of a casino that was nearby. They called the air unit to get up and come out there. They were calling the canine unit to come over there. Nobody had even made contact with the guy yet because of the way that the call was placed. Turns out he goes outside. There's the cops. They gun him down. He's dead.
Right. And the story from his fiancée was that he told the security guy, I'm not going to go out to my car and put it away just because you say so. I'm taking my – he had a handful of stuff. I'll take my stuff to the cash register. I'll cash out and I'll leave and I won't come back.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll buy my crap on the way out to the car.
Right. Now, you want to hear something really crazy?
Hmm.
I bet there are some anti-gunners watching this show right now that are saying, good. He got what he deserved.
Yeah, because he had a gun.
Yeah.
You know, and
he didn't, wearing one of those evil guns when he was confronted, he didn't immediately capitulate to a good and righteous person telling him to put it in the car.
I want to find out who these people are who are doing these lies.
Oh, yeah.
Because if they own cars and they drive, they're far more likely to drive drunk owning a car.
There's that.
So I might be so inclined if I see them do anything out of the order, following them in traffic, to come up and say, it's got to be a reckless DUI driver.
Yes.
You need to stop them and investigate.
Yes.
That's the same mentality.
He's weaving back and forth. He almost hit a pedestrian.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I address him, and all they did was open their door and vomit out the window. They're so drunk. It's this sort of thing that drives me nuts. Now,
and this is keys a little bit, just a little bit on my segment, because they have to, in their minds, promote things that are not true in order to get to this behavior.
Yes. So you have people who are anti-gun. Now, I challenge you to find anyone who's anti-gun, who's been the victim of a violent crime. I further challenge you to find anybody who is vehemently anti-gun that has ever had any sort of firearms training at all.
Right. Now,
any.
You and I used to work for a large facility, one of the nation's largest firearms schools, and you and I have had a very common experience in that every once in a while a group of people, usually a family, would manage to convince a family member, they would drag him along, him or her, who was definitely not good with guns.
Yeah.
I don't like guns.
Yeah, anti-gun.
I don't want to go that far, but I don't
certainly
like them. I don't want to be around. Yeah, surely
yeah.
not pro-gun, right?
Oftentimes just afraid of guns.
Yes, I don't like
because
them.
Because of the stigma.
I don't want one
yeah.
in my house. I don't want to be around them. I don't want to be around people who have them. Of course, coming to that school would be a big problem if you don't want to be around people who have them. But my experience and your experience were in lockstep in that, especially if they went to a four-day, because the four-day that you really have the ability to develop that comfort.
A four-day close as opposed to a two-day weekend class.
Correct.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who started, we'll call them anti-gun, who started that way in the morning of day one, who wasn't rocking it on the end of day four and was like, man, I'm in a whole nother place about firearms.
100%. And
yep.
Here's the thing. This is where it goes from ignorance to stupidity. These people who are anti-gun, who have never had anything to do with guns, are ignorant because mm-hmm. they've never handled a gun, never got any professional training. And by professional training, I mean that. And I remember when we used to do radio shows mm-hmm. for a network that was based back in Texas. And there was an engineer who worked for them who told me before one of the shows, just over the DSL line, that over the weekend her new boyfriend was going to take her shooting. And okay, well, that's like anybody taking you to drive. Just because they drive doesn't know they know how to teach you how to drive. Oh, this guy's good. He used to be in the Navy. Okay. I know somebody that retired from the Navy. Retired 20 years. He fired 6 live rounds for the Navy his entire 2 decades.
Right.
Okay, so that doesn't qualify you as in the Navy. All right, great. What kind of gun is he going to teach you with? A Beretta 92. Okay, now I know he doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
That is not a gun to hand to somebody who's new. There's too much crap going on with it. It's too big. Trigger's too janky.
Especially a woman, because of this, it's just more diminutive size.
And every time, whenever I've done any sort of training and a woman shows up with a Beretta, every single time, another 100%, she's there with a husband, boyfriend, brother, a man who put her into that gun
yes.
because, you know, he saw Lethal Weapon and the military carries it, so they got to be good. But just to finish my thought on this ignorance versus stupidity, a lot of the people who are totally ignorant anti-gunners, if they were, they're literally afraid to go ever learn anything about guns. And I believe this is because if they decided to enjoy it, then all of the effort, energy, and crap that they've put behind being anti-gun and anti-person with the gun would be for nothing, and they'd then be a hypocrite.
Right. And I'm going to give you the perfect example of that. When I was range mastering, we had a big group, and there was a family that came out, and 18-year-old son, 16-year-old daughter. Okay. The 18-year-old son was sort of this, you know, kind of goth, you know, that young
sure.
people are the whole peacenik thing, mm-hmm. and he clearly did not want to be there. And his sister was like, well, I don't know anything about guns. Okay, So here we go, 4-day class, right? The 18-year-old boy, who is just enraged that he was dragged there against his will, he keeps feigning that he's not feeling well. He keeps going out to the car, making sure he doesn't actually participate in the class. His 16-year-old sister, who on morning one was like, I don't know anything about guns. Okay. On day 4, you know, she's boom, 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 boom. She's
it.
Tearing it up, and she's loving it. She's high as a kite. She's digging it. She's mastered this. She's no longer a fearful or afraid. She's got comfort and skill of arms, to use that particular expression. And her punk 18-year-old brother is still sitting out in the car like a little whiny bitch rather than come and participate in good faith because he wanted to hang on to where he was, it defined him, and he wasn't going to let that go.
Exactly. So that's where the ignorance and stupidity come in with anti-gun. It is the only thing that I've been able to come up with in years, the only topic that is out there in popular American culture that I can come up with that has people who are so vehemently on one side of an issue that have no idea what the other side is. Therefore, when you have no idea what the other side of an argument is and you are so staunch on one side of it, you're so ignorant as to that opinion, you can't possibly consider that person's opinion to be valid. They're wasting their absolute breath. If you've never trained with guns, you don't even deserve to give an opinion about being anti-gun. Shut up. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, my friends. This is segment 4, where we talk about things that you want to talk about, provided they're things that we want to talk about. And you can email us whatever interests you right here at this email address. Bill and I both have access to that. Also, all the information about the show is at totallyunprepared.info, and there's links to all of our various social media stuff. But if you happen to be a strong Facebook person, we also have a page on Facebook. Bill, we want to talk about... We want to do a follow-up story.
We do. As a matter of fact, I'm checking the name of the little town here while we do that. This is how unprepared we are. Ronert Park.
Ronert Park. Okay.
Ronert Park, California.
So you remember Bill and I talked about a few weeks back a police officer who was being filmed by a citizen standing in the citizen's own driveway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doing nothing. The citizen's just standing there. You know, he's got his phone, and he's sitting there filming the cop. And the cop gets out of the car, approaches him, starts demanding. He takes his hand out of his pocket. The cop comes out of his... Just when you talk about completely inappropriate, abusive police conduct. That was this officer.
Okay? Yes.
Bringing his firearm out threateningly for a guy who's standing there like this. Okay. Just insane. So there's a follow-up. Why don't you tell the follow-up, Bill? Yeah,
the follow-up story is 2 weeks later, the cops show up one early weekday morning, pound on his door. He puts his dogs away, opens the door, walks out. They immediately put him in cuffs and set him down on the steps. The only other person in his house was his daughter, who was
7 years old, something like that?
Yeah, well, she's a little older than that, but she hadn't yet even gotten up to get ready for school yet. He just finished his shower. They go in there. They roust her out of bed. They claim that there was a 911 call that came in that said they heard a woman in the house screaming for help.
Right.
So after 15 minutes of searching the house without a warrant and just interrogating the little girl, and she kept held to her story, they finally believed her, then they walked out. After 15 minutes of being out there, you know, lights on, a bunch of cops, guy sitting there on the curb, being humiliated by his, you know, in front of his neighbors, they came out and they told him why they were there. He later requested, as did the local news, a copy of the 911 call, and the chief of police denied them having that.
Right. Now,
so how coincidental is this?
Oh, this is corrupt. Yeah, this is nothing but organized corruption. Guys in blue suits with badges practicing organized corruption. Now,
which is why people will occasionally offer retribution to police.
That's, you know, I wish people would get that. You know, they scream that you know, oh my God, somebody harmed a cop. Well, cops do a lot more illegal harm to citizens than citizens do to cops.
On a daily basis.
Yeah.
Every shift, every department.
And, you know, a lot of people think I'm anti-cop, and the reality is I'm pro-integrity in the job. If every cop used integrity, unlike these ass bites here in Rohnert Park, if every cop showed integrity in the job and honor in the job, there'd be the only people who would want to harm a cop would be really hardcore criminals. Okay, and it's not that way anymore because cops show such dishonor and such lack of integrity, like we're discussing right now. Now
to people universally,
right? Let's talk about this 911 recording. Okay,
the alleged 911 recording.
Two things are true about 911 recordings. First of all, whenever the law enforcement believes it's useful to their cause and they would like to say the community's assistance, they make them public. So there's nothing secretive about them. Okay, there's nothing private. There's nothing restricted about them. Nothing. Okay. Secondly, if there's no reason to release it from the police department's point of view, but a news agency requests a copy, probably 99.9% of the police departments will say, here you go, here's a copy. Again, because there's nothing confidential about these. So the fact that the Rohnert Park Police Department declined to release the thing is pretty strong evidence that either it was one of their own, it was a setup, they did it intentionally, they're lying is the bottom line on that, or there was no call.
Right.
So they can't produce tape because there was no call. And
yeah, if it supports even, yeah, there was a call. They would release it
right
immediately.
And so that the media could not go talk to neighbors. The story was that it was the caller, the anonymous caller, was somebody who was just merely driving by the house.
Yeah, which is interesting because the guy lives at the end of a cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
So they would have had to driven down there, turn around,
yeah,
listen in some amount.
And now,
it was just a guy and his daughter. He's in his shower.
Now, well, let's explain what this really is, though. If a law enforcement officer has a legal right to be within someone's home or business,
I would counter with legal authority. I wouldn't say legal right.
Okay.
I would use legal authority because there is a difference.
There is. Okay. They are within the law to be there. Okay. Let's say exigent circumstance, they're chasing a suspect, and the suspect runs into a house, and four cops run into the house behind him. Okay, the courts have determined hot pursuit is one of the exigent circumstances for which you can enter without a warrant. So they get in the house, they catch the guy, he's hiding in a closet, they handcuff him, and as they're doing that, they look over, and there's a pound of cocaine on the table. Okay, because they had the legal authority to be there in the first place, anything that is within ordinary eyesight can then be acted upon. Okay, that's all this was about. Okay, they were hoping that they would have this contrived story. I'm sorry, they had this contrived story, and were hoping when they contrived a legal rationale to be within the four walls of the house, they were hoping they'd see some pot on the table or some a mirror with some residue and a razor blade sitting on the bedroom dresser. They were hoping they would find something to hook this guy up and discredit him after how he humiliated, in their minds, humiliated them 2 weeks ago, when in fact they humiliated themselves.
And if, and they did it again, if they were to, if they did find something and they arrested him on that, any defense attorney with their weight and salt would be able to go back and they would have to show that, in fact, that wasn't a setup. It did, in fact, happen. Otherwise, it's fruits of the poisonous tree. And everything from them knocking on the door and going in is illegal and inadmissible.
Yep.
Now, there's another viewer actually sent in another email that came in. And it was along the lines of what would we believe would be reasonable in the workplace for the employees to be able to carry guns for their own safety. Because keep in mind, there it's not uncommon. It's not that common, but it does happen on an annual basis, several different times it'll happen, where you get someone who's an estranged lover, estranged husband or spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, that goes into a workplace and just starts whacking people, just starts gunning them down, and they're all victims because they can't have guns.
Right, right. It's a touchy situation because an employer, somebody might be able to convince a jury that an employer is responsible for the wrongful act of an employee, even if the employee is acting morally. Let me give you, we'll use this example you said about the jilted lover coming in, and let's say the jilted lover comes in, has a knife, and he knifes his spouse, and then somebody tries to interfere, and he starts knifing that person, and there's John Q. Citizen, the other employees over here. He comes out of the holster, press, his second, the first one hits the guy in the head, he goes down, second round goes off, goes past, and kills the nun standing outside in the courtyard. Okay. I understand that employers could be concerned that when the nun's family sued, they would sue the business too, claiming that the business didn't have any policies or procedures in place to manage this process of people in the workplace with guns. So I think the answer is one of these things where just step by step. There needs to be legislation that says that
protects the owner, the business owner.
Yes, but I don't want to protect the business owner without any restrictions. For instance, we've all worked with people who we thought were pretty edgy, okay? Mm-hmm. Kind of like, whoa, this guy's got a gun. I mean, there used to be a young man that was walking around here in Pahrump, and I was, you know, there's nobody who respects the right to keep and bear arms more than me, and I'm a big fan of open carry. And man, this guy, I was like, woo! I mean, he's the exception that proves the rule, right?
Yes.
And we all know people like that, right? Now, what if he works for a company? Okay. So, for instance, perhaps the standard is, and I think this should perhaps be in the law to protect the employer. If you've required your employees to go take, say, 16 hours of firearms training, okay, before they can carry at work.
Which, by the way, is not nearly enough.
It's not. I'm just trying to, you know, something the legislature could work with, because they don't know what the hell they're doing either
sure.
when it comes to guns.
You
know, 16 hours of training is better than 16 hours of training is better than, well, look, Marge, we can go out in the field and I can use this shotgun to blow up the old microwave. You know, 16 hours of training is better than that, okay? So if an employee has 16 hours of training, provides a completion certificate to the employer, then if something happens, like I just described, there can be no liability placed on the employer for the actions of the employees, provided the actions of the employees are within the boundaries of the law.
Okay. Which, by the way, I think that your use of the nun in the background would actually be easier, because all you have to do is go to the church and say, look, it was an eye for an eye sort of a thing. Can you give us forgiveness?
There
and
you
all
go.
Would be
right,
forgiven.
Right. Yes,
so
yes.
That would actually probably be a little easier to take care of.
Yes. The employer could go say, you know, if I accept your whole religion thing, can you forgive me for this? I don't have to go to court.
Now, I am with you. I think that if there was some sort of a standard put together, and what an industry this could be, a boon for an industry.
By the way, I do have to say, it speaks ill of the American people that the employer has to worry about this.
I would agree. Now, here's another thing that I find to be interesting. And Nevada does not have this protection, but a number of states have provided it, where employers have said, if you're going to park your vehicle on our property, no guns, which then leaves them completely disarmed between work and home.
Right.
And if they need to stop and go somewhere, and they would normally protect themselves.
Right.
That's the way it is in Nevada. I know somebody that used to work for a major property on the Las Vegas Strip, and that was their deal. All employees must park in this employee parking area. Where guns are banned. And, you know, this person had no interest in wanting to follow that and just kept it quiet.
And what kills me, though, is that the employers think, my right as an employer supersedes your right to exist. What?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So there are no protections in Nevada for that yet.
There are in Florida, I think, which is one of the big corporate cases came out of Florida.
Florida, Missouri, Utah, I think, have all handled this where they say, look, they're going to be able to leave them in their car. You cannot keep them unprotected off of your property, and you cannot make a company policy to where they cannot exercise their God-given Second Amendment right, their constitutionally protected, enumerated Second Amendment right, outside of your property.
And while it's rare, there have been cases of people running out to their car, getting a gun, running back in, and solving a problem.
True. Yeah. As a matter of fact, it happened in a school shooting where an assistant principal went out to his car, came in, and stopped the kid. And he was vilified by a number of teachers and the teachers' union for it. Terrible.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Take care.